Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This Program. I am your host, Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
We're happy to have you all along. And happy June, folks. You know, it's it is that time of year where life gets to be, hectic. You know, it's more fun stuff, but it's hectic.
Yes. And Saturday, 5 graduation open houses.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't have to endure with 27 and 22. It's going to be a while until
those days are over, Joe.
Until somebody can force me to have to go back to that. I people say I'm ornery, but I used to give Barb, she got 2 weddings and 2 open houses a year. That's, you can pick them, but you know, people want the check. They don't need me eating their food. You know, that's just the way that I kind of looked at it. So anything big for your month of June, Ken?
Not really. You know, summer vacation for the kids. My daughter's, you know, summer break from IU.
Yep.
Son's going to be a junior at Carmel, so he's got a lot of football stuff this summer and working out, hopefully, and getting some stuff done.
Cool. Angie?
I'm just going to try to get a bunch of landscaping, remodeling, things that I haven't had time to do all year, and I do have 2 weddings on the list to go month.
So for me, it's reading the new Secure America Tax Act that's getting ready to come out.
Oh, yippee.
Because I'm the exciting one of the bunch, but that's my job. We sent out a letter last week, in fact, telling people that this was coming. You can find that, I'm sure, somewhere on our website at yourlifeafterwork.com. If you can't, let me know, and Angie or Ashley, somebody will send it to you. But the general impetus is 2 things. One, they're going to let you save money into IRA. And this, by the way, has bipartisan support. So it's already passed Congress. I didn't even know they could spell bipartisan in Washington anymore. I mean, I really didn't. So it's kind of shocking to me. But anyhow, this is probably going to get done, but the RMD age is likely to change to 72.
Oh, wow.
Required minimum distribution age. The second thing that would do is then let people contribute to IRAs a little bit longer, which opens up the opportunity to do what we call a backdoor Roth IRA. And Angie said one of the questions that we had this week was, can I continue to put money into a Roth as I age? And we are going to get to that question later on. But a lot of this is about retirees, a little bit about student debt, going back to work after 50 or changing jobs. We're going to talk a little bit about a precast of what's coming next week with dealing with dementia and money. And then what do you do with a 401k when you switch jobs? So you're listening to Joe Clark, Ken Dilger, Angie Kinzer here on Consider This Program. You got a question or comment? Give us a call, 800-928-4001. We will take a break and be back in a flash.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own. If they were in your situation, there are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This Program with Joe Clark.
Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This Program. I'm your host, Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
We're happy to have you all along. You know, we brought this story up, Angie, I think before you were actually on the program with us. I know I wrote a newspaper column about it, and it just baffled me. And then and I actually said it on the show that I think I'm giving you good data. I think I'm giving you good data. But remember this, people, if you're researchers, always pay attention to the date on the article. Google is data sensitive, not date sensitive. And why that's so important is, you know, in 2007, the IRS told us, and this is just a for instance, in 2007, Ken, we got a memo that said starting in 2010, there is no age restriction on Roth recharacterizations.
Okay. Right?
So from 2007 through 2017, I wrote article after article after article We have about $38 million worth of Roth money that people would not have been able to have if we hadn't paid attention to that tax code. It was a big part of the driving force of our firm and what we did. Well, the 2017 Tax Act changed it. Right, so I've written two letters. It says you can't do that anymore. But if you Google it, what's going to pop up? The 55 or the 2, right? And the answer is you've got to be very, very careful. So I thought this was wrong. One of our families that's big into the student debt world said, Joe, it is worse than you think, and actually gave us some statistics that I know surprised Angie. But this is actually out of an article that was came out of Forbes. That put on there. So here we go, Ken. This is what I said, so it kind of confirmed that. Seniors are our fastest growing group of borrowers, right? Now, what does that mean? When I say that you're a borrower, Ken, because you know this, because when you fill out mortgage apps, right?
Correct.
You're not just asking what I borrowed, you're asking what I...
Oh.
Well,
what you make.
And I co-signed.
Well, yeah,
right?
Co-signed too.
Because
seniors now are co-signing for their kids.
Exactly. Yes. So your kids show up and he needs a car and you want him to go ahead and establish credit and you put a little pen to paper, right? Or you've got a grandson that says, you know, and this happened, you know, Kendra's not a ding-a-ling, right? My daughter, you know, when she decided that she was going to go to Anderson University for a while, she couldn't get the grants and the help that she could get. And she goes, Dad, it's no problem. You just have to sign here. Kendra, that's a problem, right? That is a problem. So fastest growing group of borrowers, but it's because they're co-signing is what we can essentially get out of the article. What Angie didn't know, which surprised her, is Social Security can actually be garnished, right? Now, when you think about Social Security, there are as many people or more that are on Social Security disability as there are just on Social Security. And so one of the things the article said is the fastest amount of garnishing is actually coming from people that are on disability. Well, that's because they're under 62. You can get Social Security at 40 if you have health issues, right? And so they still have that. And yes, it's and Angie, you did the research on it because I didn't know that it's up to 15%.
15% that can be garnished. 15%
of it can be garnished. So... And for a lot of people, that's what they're living on. Student debt over the age of 60, this is staggering, is up 71.5% in the last 5 years. Right? So, Ken, we've talked about this before in the mortgage world. And this is, in my opinion, of what's happening. One of the big things that you have to look for is debt-to-income ratio.
Of course.
And, you know, so you've got a kid that's got $40,000 worth of debt. Right. And suddenly he's got a $600 or $800 a month payment. Right. That's, you know, now they've got to make 2,400 because you're looking for a number somewhere between 30% and 40% on debt to income ratio.
Yeah, it depends on what loan program we do. FHA can go up to 50%.
I know
DTI,
you told me that. I don't want to talk about it.
Which is kind of crazy.
I don't want to support that.
You know, a lot of people think that even if they defer their student debt, they don't have to count a payment if they want to get a car payment or even a mortgage. But Fannie has, if you don't have a mortgage payment or you don't have a student loan payment on your credit report, you take 1% of the loan balance. Freddie Mac is half a percent for your monthly payment. So even if you defer it, you still have to count that debt to income or debt towards your income,
wow.
Debt to income ratio.
So amazing.
You never get away from it unless you pay it off.
71.5% in the last 5 years. That's a big ticket. That's a shift. Seniors age 60 to 69 owe $85.4 billion. Now, that's a lot of money, right? I don't want to have a debt attached to my name that says $84.5 billion. But I will tell you, the amount that we owe in student debt is way over a trillion. I actually think it's closer to two. I think it's like 1.7, but I could be wrong. Anyhow, staggering numbers and data. So, Angie, you had a question that somebody had sent in on that I thought you wanted to ask.
Yes, we did have a listener call in to ask which retirement account, if they did want to help a grandson or pay for college, which of their accounts should they use? And so that kind of, when then we had someone else, one of our families, send the article in, so it kind of just made a topic for the day.
So there's three things here that I would hit real quickly. So Ken, how much money can I give you every year?
As an individual, $15,000.
Correct. And because you're married?
$30,000.
And because I'm married,
Another 30,000.
Right. So total of 60 if you really, really wanted to. There are two exceptions to that rule. One is if you mail money directly to an institution for higher education, and the second one is for medical bills. Those are two things that put people in bankruptcy. So as the grandfather, one, if you're going to give the money, understand you can't take money out of your IRA or your 401k without it being fully taxable. So this is taxable income to you. Now, presuming as a grandfather, you're over 59 and a half, right? You're not going to have a 10% federal penalty to pull the money out of your IRA account. However, it is fully taxable. So if you're 57 or 58 years old and you're thinking about doing this, and this is certainly not me endorsing that, but if you're thinking about doing it, you may want to take a loan out of your 401k and then do the distribution after you're 59 and a half outside of the 401k so that you don't have the taxable penalty that's involved. But if you're going to send the money directly to the higher education institution, there is no limit to what you can send other than what good common sense would be. But so many times I see people put that money in the grandchild's account, and then the grandchild's supposed to pay rent or buy books or do the other. That gift would be limited to $15,000. And in my experience at teaching at Purdue University, a lot of it also winds up at Harry's. If you're not familiar with Lafayette, Indiana, Harry's would be the local pub, right? And, you know, people just live that life, that, you know, the college life, the experience, as they call it. So I told you there were a few things as a grandparent to think about. When you're looking at your retirement accounts, and this is one of the reasons we talk about tax diversification, if you've got Roth IRA money, and it would depend on where your tax bracket is, you may want to take it out of the Roth IRA so that you don't have to pay taxes on it. And again, I'm not a big fan of telling people to borrow money where they're taking on more debt. I really don't think that's a great plan, but you do have to pay attention to the tax code. If you know you have the asset, if it's sitting in a retirement account and you're under 59 and a half, where you have a federal tax penalty that you have to deal with, then you may very well want to consider delaying that, taking the distribution as a loan, or even going to a bank and borrowing the money off of another asset. You can't borrow it off your 401k unless you're borrowing it through your 401k. You can't borrow money from IRAs, right? But just be careful. Pay attention to the tax code. It's a great question. I don't like that stuff. Still shocks me, but it is there. So you got a question or comment, you can shoot us an email. Consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com or give us a call, 800-928-4001. We'll take a break and be right back. Welcome to Consider This program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
We're happy to have you guys all along. You know, if you've got a question, something that you want to hear us talk about, because this show really is about you, Consider This program is dedicated to educating people about their money. I'm the managing partner at the Financial Enhancement Group. We take care of people who don't want to worry about their money. For those of you who want to learn about your money, we put this program on. Remember, we do not talk about the market. We get questions about that every week. We send out a free market carver. It's a video update or recap over what we thought was the most important thing that happened in the market last week. That's free to you. You just have to sign up at yourlifeafterwork.com. Just let us know you want it. So this is one of the questions that got called in. Again, 800-928-4001. If you have a question you would like to hear us ask or answer on the show. Angie.
Yes, I mean, we've been talking about how people are working longer. And one of the questions that someone had is if they decided to retire from their full-time job but agreed to stay on 20 hours a week or so to consult, can they still roll their 401k out into an IRA?
And the answer would be absolutely. Rolling the money out of your 401k into an IRA with what's called separation of service, right? So there's a couple things we need to hit here, right? You're working for someplace and you decide you're going to retire or you're going to quit, right? Which happens more often than you might think. When you separate service, you have the right. And in fact, if your amount's small enough in your 401k, they can even force you to take it, right? And roll it into an individual retirement account, an IRA, again, in your name. There's no taxes, right? There's no taxes that come from that. So you can do that clearly. Now, the next question in my mind I would ask is, if I was going to do that 20-hour a week job, can I still contribute? Okay. Well, you can only contribute to a 401k if the plan has a 401k. Right. So if I'm consulting, you know, Ken's got a mortgage business that he runs. And so Ken calls and says, Joe, give me some advice. Give me some guidance. And I say, yeah, Ken, because I like you, and for $1,000 an hour, right?
Yeah, of course.
So now I'm a consultant, right? And now I'm getting that money. So I'm technically a self-employed individual at the time, right? I would be what's called a 1099 employee, because Ken's gonna deduct my cost as a business expense. He's going to send me a 1099 at the end of the year. I'm going to have to pay Social Security tax on both sides of that. That's why one of the reasons you want to be careful being a 1099 employee. So I'll pay the essentially 15.65%. But you can work that 20 hours a week and still contribute to an IRA, right? IRA income is limited by your amount of earned income. You have to have earned income, and it's limited by your age. A Roth contribution, on the other hand, right now is only limited by you making too much money. So ostensibly, unless you're a neurosurgeon or something, if you're working 20 hours a week as a consultant, your income level will probably be low enough that you could contribute to a Roth. But you need to check that out on your tax return. But it really is a good question to understand. Now, having the right question is very, very important, right?
Of course.
Sometimes it's even more important than having the right answer. I come up with a lot of ideas. We talk about this in our coach class all the time. You know, it's like, Joe, that's a great idea, but is it the right idea? Right? And that's what I tell people a lot with their money. You know, that's a great question, but is it the right question? Right? Is that the one that you really want to focus on for your retirement? And that's, you know, something to consider. Go ahead, Angela.
Well, another question we've had, for instance, some of our families here have maybe decided 5 years down the road, we're ready to retire. But for whatever reason, they've had a job change before their plan to retire. And so now suddenly they've got to find something to do with the same income for the next 3 or 4 years. A lot of times the new company or the old company will offer to keep that plan or move it into a different 401k plan. If they are eligible to roll it out into an IRA, what are the advantages to having it in an IRA versus just putting it into another 401k plan?
That's a good question. So let's talk about the differences between 401ks and IRAs. So under a 401k, what we call a Department of Labor plan, key thing is the beneficiary has to be your spouse unless you've signed off after marriage. So what we call a postnuptial. Prenuptial agreements do not satisfy Department of Labor regulations. So don't let an attorney tell you that they do. The case code is very, very, very clear on that. If you've got a prenuptial that says my 401k goes to my kids, if the current spouse fights it, it will not. It just will not. So that's the first one. An IRA, I could make Angie my beneficiary, right? Barb, my wife, is entitled to half of everything we have in Indiana. So if I gave away everything I had to Angie, she could come back in court and fight to get her half back, right? That's just the way the deal works. So that's the first one. The two other ones are a little trickier. When I take money out of an IRA, and I'm, again, not encouraging this at all because it usually goes bad. But you can take money out of an IRA and put it back in 60 days later. Don't be 61 days, right? And by the way, if you mess this up, the private letter ruling cost to get relief is $10,000 now.
Oh, wow.
Right? So this is not one you play with. We don't encourage it. But you can take money out of an IRA, and there's no tax withholding unless you tell the company to tax withhold, and you've got 60 days to put it back in. You can only do that one time in a 365-day period of time. Now, interestingly enough, the IRS rules on IRAs come from what's called Publication 590. That's the guide that we would go to, where 2 years ago it clearly said, Ken, you could do it once every calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody did it and lost.
Oh, wow.
Right. So yeah, of all the IRAs in your name, you can do this one time every 365 days. Wouldn't recommend it, but there's no tax withholding, right? So if I was trying to buy a house and I needed to have a down payment and I knew where the money was coming from. In another 30 days, I could take money out of my IRA in theory to be able to make part of that down payment and pay it back. No taxes, no harm, no foul if I wanted to do that.
So they consider anything over 60 days a taxable event?
Yes, but if, fully taxable. Okay. Subject to both the 10% federal penalty if you're under 59 and a half, plus full taxation at marginal income. You cannot get money out of an IRA before 59 and a half unless you're dead or disabled. Right? Now, there's some exceptions. Remember, all tax policy, social policy. So sometimes higher education is good, sometimes it's not. You know, that stuff kind of floats back and forth. With a 401k, and this is often missed, you can actually get the money out at 55 as long as you don't have higher income, that you go to another job and you're making a bunch of money. So if you've got high earned income, that won't help you. But if you really want to retire at 55, there's an advantage to being in the 401k. The disadvantage is every time you take money out of the 401k, there's a 20% mandatory withholding that goes to the federal government. And most people are not in the 20% bracket, at least in central Indiana where we are today. You can make up to about $104,000 a year, married, filing jointly, and stay inside of the 12% bracket. So you've effectively overpaid the IRS just because of an outdated, archaic rule that probably should be there to some extent, but not at the level that it is. But great questions. We may even come back to that because there's a topic I love that I will probably write the newspaper article on this week called 50 and Starting Over, and just making a change. You're listening to Consider This Program. Our number is 800-928-4001. You're always welcome to go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com. If you want to do this on your own, that's your business. If you're looking for a fiduciary, that's our business. Again, 800-928-4001. We'll take a break and be right back. Welcome back to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
They're really co-hosts, too. You know, we guess we ought to maybe consider that. But anyhow, this is one of my favorite topics. For people who don't know, I've been in this industry since 2 weeks before the crash in 87. And there's an interesting thing psychologically that we know to be true in behavioral finance, which I've always found fascinating. If you're losing money and they do the brain scans on you, the part of your brain that fires up is identical to that of mortal danger, okay, of being whacked. On the other hand, if you're making money, it's the same as being high on cocaine, you know, one of those other drugs. It's just how our mind works. Now, take that to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. If something happens in your life 3 times in a row, your mind meets with just extreme, how is this possible, right? So if I send you a statement, right? So we're talking about your money. If I send you a statement and it's gone down 3 months in a row or 3 quarters in a row, your mind begins to extrapolate with that mortal fear of how long until I'm broke, how long until I'm out of money, right? That's a dangerous feeling. It got people into trouble in 08. I've seen it get people into trouble in 87, though I don't remember it as much. It certainly happened, and I can go back and look at the data and show it. We watched it happen to a degree in 16. We watched it happen a lot in 09. Certainly watched it happen in 02, and then the proverbial tech wreck of 2000. Watched all that happen. The one that gets people in the most trouble, though, is the other one. It's when money is going up, so 3 quarters in a row you've made 10 or 12% each quarter, and now you've extrapolated how long until you're going to be a billionaire, right? You know, and so back in the 98, 99, I mean, you had accounts that were up well over 100% in a year, right? And so people were beginning to take that mindset of, you know, I'm going to be, and they would want to walk out of General Motors. I didn't have an office really in Lafayette at the time. And they would want to walk out of General Motors. And I would strongly encourage him to do what I called a sabbatical, right? To figure out if they'll give you 3 months off, right? You really do not want to retire from that. This is a bad plan. You know, I'm not telling you the market's going to go to zero. I'm not telling you you know, that it's that overvalued. I'm just telling you that this is a bad plan. Markets behave in a very predictable manner, right? But here we are again today, and we've had an eight-year bull run in the market, right? There's been a lot of volatility since December of 18, and then January, you know, so we had the worst December since 1931, the best January since January of 87. But we got people that are over 50 that are starting over. And you start over for different reasons, right? So is it a good idea to start over? You know, Ken went from playing in the NFL, you know, to a few other things, and now you've wound up as, I always forget, is it mortgage broker? Is that a tech term?
Mortgage banker.
Mortgage banker. I knew it started with a B. You got to help me with this, Ken. You got to.
There are some brokers still left, but we're
going to have to write
banker.
It on my board. Okay. So sometimes you start over because your career ends. It's got a drop dead date on it of when you can't do it anymore. In the CPA world, most of my partners have to stop at 65. And I can, as I age at 52, you know, I can tell you it took me longer to figure out the new tax code than it did the first time I had to figure out the tax code. So, you know, I can see where that might make a little bit of sense. Is it good to start over, Angie?
Well, there's all different kinds of reasons, but if one of them is that you have to have experience before you really discover what your true gifts are. Yes, I think so.
You threw out some names I knew Disney because I'm a Disney fan.
Yes. You know, I like to find out this stuff of famous people or celebrities. And these are the three. Joy Behar, that's on The View. She was a high school English teacher until she was 40 years old.
Oh, wow.
And suddenly she got on The View.
All right. So I'm going to fess up. Do you even know what The View is, Ken?
Yeah, because I always hear the squabble going on between the girls on The View. And
so what's The View?
It's just a talk show.
It's like four women sitting around a table talking about stuff, and sometimes
you may never
have guessed. You don't sound that excited about
it. You may
have
never guessed,
but
I have no idea who this even is.
Okay.
So move on to ones I do know.
Well, here's someone you'll know. Walt Disney.
Yes, this one I knew.
Had a career of being a newspaper editor before.
Up to what age?
I think he was 40.
I think it was 39, 40.
Okay. Now, this one I thought was really interesting. Julia Child. She worked for the U.S. government as an agent before later in life she became a French cuisine chef.
Sure did. So there's those reasons. Sometimes it takes time to be able to get there. Sometimes it's bad stuff like death or divorce, right, where somebody has to start over. We see that happen every now and then. I'm going to hit the financial part of it, though, right? So I had one of our families we take care of, and he just really got tired of his stuff. He got tired of doing what he was doing, right? He was 55, and he said, 54. He said, Joe, do I really have to keep doing this? And I said, no. What you have to do is give me more time to let what you already have accumulated continue to grow, right? Because that does two things for you, right? When you go to retire, I have to deal with how much money you've accumulated. And as Einstein made it very, very clear, he says he didn't know what the seventh wonder of the world was, but the eighth wonder is clearly compound interest. All right, so if you're 55 and you've saved $500,000 and you can let that $500,000 just continue to build for another 5 to 7 years to 62, right, or whatever age, that helps. But the second part of it is life expectancy, right? The earlier you retire, the longer I have to have all of these assumptions of what market returns are going to be, what the inflation rate's going to be. I don't think that you shouldn't assume what the tax rate is going to be, right? Because we already know what happens in 2025 at the end of the year when the current tax code sunsets. But if you can figure out how to find something that merely replaces what you need for your standard of living, right? So if you only need, and I've got a cousin like this, if you only need $20,000 a year because you want to cut lumber and you've always been a college professor, then all you have to do is make $20,000 a year, right? And you can get in a van and you can go travel the world and have a great time. If you want to live in a lake cottage, you know, you can figure out what the costs are and you can go. And what I see happen a lot is some of the people who started over based on that equation that I just gave you, Angie, where it was, you have to support your standard of living. Somehow or another, another gig comes along and you get offered a really good job, right? And you've had 6 months off. You've had that sabbatical. So it wasn't me saying a sabbatical this time. It was them figuring it out on their own. But many times they wind up going back, right? So just go ahead.
I had another statistic from the Department of Labor, and it's saying that 40% of the population of those over 55, 40% are employed.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
So I just noticed that.
So again, that's data you've always got to be careful of, because they're factoring in unemployment, they're factoring in disability. And when you get into the unemployment numbers, you can get into some very ugly fights with people. So you have to be really, really careful. But the unemployment rate is very low, but so is the participation rate.
Well, when I was researching this, I found it very interesting that the people who are over 55 starting a new career have totally different jobs than the people who are retired looking to work.
Absolutely. Hey, you're listening. Consider this program, 800-928-4001. Good morning and welcome back to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
And if you're not listening in the morning, you're not sleeping. You know, it's okay. I apologize for putting that in there. We've done this show so long in so many places. Early in the morning, we recognize now across the country, I think we're in over 30 states as of right now, when people listen to the show, it could be at all different times on all different stations. So just take it in. Here's the format of the show. It's what we try to do. We try to help educate you about your money so you can make the best possible financial decision. I'm not trying to give you all of the information you need to go out and make that decision. Just trying to give you a basis of understanding so that when you're working with your fiduciary, when you're working with your CPA, that you have a broad understanding of what it is you need to discuss. That's the objective. So please don't take any of this as formal advice that this is what you can rush out and do without more help. We have four conversations. We already had those today. And then we have the quiz on those four in our fifth conversation. So we go to see what Angie and Ken actually were able to retain during the course of the show. No, just kidding. We won't make it that hard.
Probably not much, Joe.
No, I hate this part.
Yeah, I know you hate this part. I love this part. Can you tell I taught at Purdue for 7 years?
Yes.
But they loved you, didn't they?
Oh, I had the highest marks in the, yes, they did. Ask them. Five of them work here.
There you go.
So, yeah. All right. So retirees and student debt, we went over the data. It is astounding. A 71% increase in the last 5 years for people over 65, right?
Let me ask you this, Joe. If a student going to college applies for student aid, do the parents always have to co-sign on it?
No. That's where you get into that wonderful FAFSA you had to fill out.
Yeah.
Right? And the more money you have, the less aid they're eligible for.
Oh.
And under the Obama administration, the less they could even borrow in their own name.
Oh, wow.
That's when you get into the Parent Plus loans.
Gotcha.
That's why we've seen in the last 5 years, I mean, I was trying to stay away from that, but since you drug it out of me, that's where that came from the last 5 years.
Okay.
Because they didn't used to have to deal with the Parent Plus loans. You know, you either had parents who wrote the checks, right? Or the students were able to get debt. Now, I'm not saying that that was a good thing.
Right.
I'm just telling you that's why all of a sudden you see 65-year-olds with a 71.5% increase in terms of what's going on. The data is truly phenomenal. Now, the math, on the other hand, as you recall, was $84 billion was for people that were 60 and over. $84.5 billion is a lot of money, but it doesn't come anywhere near the amount of overall student debt that we have inside of this country.
Right.
So the big thing that shocked Angie was Social Security.
Yes.
What about?
That it can be garnished.
Yeah. So if you've co-signed, and that's what it's really happened, when you think about a Parent Plus loan, that's a co-sign. And when you think about it, you're on the hook, right? If I co-sign a loan for Angie, I'm on the hook just as much as Angie is. Right. And the day Angie doesn't make the payment, the bank's going to call me and say, Mr. Clark, turns out your Social Security number is attached to this account. Right. And then I'm going to have to come up. And that's what happens. And if I don't have the money, they can garnish, which is just an ugly word for take.
Yep. 15%.
Right? Up to 15% of your Social Security. And the majority of them were on disability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's people who are under 62 that get disability for Social Security, for SSI. We talked about 401ks and switching jobs and whether or not you're able to do that. Can you roll your 401k if you switch jobs, Angie?
Yes. And you can roll it into an IRA.
You can roll it into an IRA. And the one that I left out in that, and Ken, it's called an in-service non-hardship distribution. But there are 401k plans that are better than others that are out
there.
And some plans will allow for you at certain ages to do what's called an in-service non-hardship distribution. And that's where we roll money out of a 401k while you're still working there because you don't like the menu options or you don't like everything that's going on that's happening. And I will just tell you this just in case you're in a pickle. If you pull money out of a 401k, you've got full taxation regardless of your age. And if you happen to be under 59 and a half, you get a 10% federal tax penalty. And they're going to withhold 20%. So let's say, Angie, that you knew money was going to come to you inside of 45 days.
Okay.
Right? You would be better to do an in-service non-hardship distribution if you were eligible for that, to roll that money to an IRA and then take the money out of the IRA to do whatever it is you had to do today or tomorrow, right? And that is true because?
You have 60 days before it actually becomes a taxable event, so you could use that money and then replace it.
Is that once every calendar year or is that once every 365 days?
365 days.
Even though all of the data you're going to find on the internet or the extreme majority of it is going to tell you that it's a calendar year, it is 365 days and it used to be calendar year and it used to be per IRA. So a gentleman had, I think it was 12 IRAs. And he would pull money out of one and then refund it with the next one and refund it with the next one and refund it with the next one and refund it with the next one. The IRS decided that was probably not fair. and now we have a rule change, right? And that works. But it's thinking some of this through. And I guess if you get anything out of the show, you know, the majority of people who listen to financial programs are wanting to hear me say, have no debt. And I will tell you to make sure you manage your debt, right? It's, you know, the less debt you have, the better off you're going to be. There's just no way around it. Margin is a beautiful thing. It helps you a whole lot when bad things happen and helps you a whole lot when good things happen, right? So I'm there. It doesn't mean all debt is evil, but I'm all in favor of having less debt, especially high interest credit debt and those kind of things. You know, it just is what it is. So have no debt. And a lot of people want to hear talk about how much you save and invest. And those both matter. I'll tell you to save and invest, but please don't forget the tax code, right? It's the biggest thing that I see missed in most people's financial lives is that they didn't think about the taxes early and often. By early, I mean, you think about it, tax diversification when you're young and you're first starting out and your income may not even be taxed at the marginal level. Like Ken, you and I talked with your daughter coming home from college, if she gets a part-time job or an internship this summer, you know, she's not going to make enough to be taxed at the marginal rate. All of that money should go to a Roth IRA. None of it should be tax deferred. Why in the world would we want to tax defer zero, right? Makes no sense. But you want to build tax diversification along the way because most likely, hopefully, you'll get to a place where you're not eligible to do that anymore. Or the IRS has changed the rules, right? So, you know, be smart along the way. And then we went to one of my favorite conversations, 50 and starting over, things to consider, to come back to. Again, the big one there when you're leaving an employer is to pay attention to healthcare, right? Know your budget. You do not have to replace 100% of your income. You have to replace 100% of your standard of living. Give us a call, 800-928-4001, yourlifeafterwork.com. Have an outstanding week, my friends. We will see you again soon.